Hello, this is Kathy Hart, host of the Health First Radio Show. We have some great guests on for you today. In the first half, we're going to hear from Dr. Natalie Strand, winner of the Amazing Race. And in the second half, we're going to be speaking with Lisa Kilgore, a nutritionist, and she's going to be talking about gentle detoxification and nurturing digestion. But first, here's Alan with our Health First News.
Decisions about diabetes care can become harder as people age, and that may be especially true for those needing hospice care. A new study has found that among people getting hospice care in a nursing home, diabetes care may lead to higher rates of dangerous low blood sugar episodes, known as hypoglycemia. That finding came from the researchers' analysis of data on nearly 20,000 people with type 2 diabetes, all in nursing homes and receiving hospice care. In 180 days, the time period covered by the study, about 1 in 9 people experienced low blood sugar episodes. But among those treated with insulin, about 1 in 3 had low blood sugar episodes, according to the study's lead author, Dr. Laura Petrillo, an instructor in medicine at Harvard Medical School. The study was published as a research letter in the December 26th online edition of JAMA Internal Medicine. People who stick to their New Year's resolutions to be healthier this year might not just feel better, but also reduce their risk for cancer, a new study suggests. In fact, their chances of developing cancer could drop by 33%, researchers said. Study author Peter Elwood, with Cardiff University in the United Kingdom, said the take-home message is that healthy behaviors can have a truly tangible benefit. A healthy lifestyle has many benefits additional to cancer reduction, he said, in a news release from the journal eCancer Medical Science. It costs nothing, has no undesirable side effects, and is better than any pill. The findings were published January 4th in eCancer Medical Science. The way your body processes your morning cup of coffee might indicate whether or not you have Parkinson's disease, a new study says. Japanese researchers found that low levels of caffeine were more common in people with Parkinson's disease than in those without the disorder, even if they consumed the same amount of caffeine. Parkinson's disease is a neurodegenerative disorder that mainly causes problems with motor symptoms, such as tremors or difficulty walking. Previous studies have suggested that caffeine may have a protective effect against the disease, the researchers noted. The new study from Japan included 108 people with Parkinson's disease without obvious memory problems and 31 age-matched healthy people without the disease to serve as the control group. The study was published January 3rd in the journal Neurology. For people with tinnitus, the persistent sense of ringing in the ears is mildly annoying at best and disabling at worst. But a new device may help ease the phantom noises, researchers report. The experimental device uses precisely timed sound and skin stimulation to target nerve activity in the brain. It quelled the bothersome sounds in lab animals and improved quality of life in a test group of 20 humans, according to University of Michigan researchers. Lead researcher Susan Shore said animal studies have identified specific nerve cells in the brain, called fusiform cells, that signal phantom sounds to the rest of the brain. The report was published January 3rd in the journal Science Translational Medicine.
Dr. Natalie Strand is an anesthesiologist and pain management specialist who currently works at the Mayo Clinic. She also is a person living with type 1 diabetes. She has always done her best to motivate and inspire others with diabetes. She competed on and won the Amazing Race, being the first person with diabetes to win the show and also part of the first of all women teams to win. Welcome, Natalie.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
It's so good to have you on the show. So tell me a little bit about you're an accomplished doctor, and you're also have lived with diabetes, the type 1 diabetes, but you're also an amazing athlete.
Well, I don't know if I'd go so far to say that I'm an amazing athlete, but I definitely have an adventurous spirit. So I like to be active. I like to go on adventures, but I'm not going to say that I'm, you know, competitive athlete or anything like that.
So, but with type 1 diabetes, what kind of complications, how in what way does this make it hard to compete and to do athletics?
You know, type 1 diabetes is such a pervasive and almost invisible disease sometimes. So, you know, to be really honest, there's not a part of my life that isn't affected by type 1 diabetes. But, for example, as far as activity goes, you know, if you have insulin on board, that insulin gets a lot more potent when you're exercising. So the same amount of insulin that I would take for breakfast, if I take that and then go for a walk or take an exercise class or decide to go for a hike, I'm going to have an insulin reaction and go really low unless I suspend my insulin. So really any activity that you do, you have to take diabetes into account. You have to take into account when your last shot was, what your actual blood sugar is in the moment, because being too high can also cause problems. So you're kind of always walking this tightrope when it comes to activity and diabetes.
And how often do you need to check your blood sugar?
Well, it changes. On a regular day, so if I'm not ill, I'm not doing activity, I'm not traveling, you know, which is, I guess, not a regular day for me, but say there was that kind of a day, I would check it, you know, when I woke up, before every meal, before I go to bed, and if I ever felt kind of funny. On a day that I'm doing activity, I can check it as often as every 10 to 20 minutes. Again, if I'm ill, I check it up more often. And actually, right now, I'm wearing a continuous glucose monitor on my abdomen, and that checks my blood sugar every 5 minutes. So I really have a good handle on, you know, not only what the blood sugar is, but also if it's trending up or trending down and how quickly it's changing.
And does that actually adjust the insulin for you too, or you still have to use the insulin?
I still have to use the insulin, but it gives me so much more information, so it makes dosing the insulin a lot easier.
Mm-hmm. You've worked closely with the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation and the American Diabetes Association. What kind of problems are caused from diabetes when you're looking at oral health?
Well, you know, according to the Centers for Disease Control, people living with diabetes are actually 2 times more likely to develop gum disease. And that's actually the reason why I partnered with Colgate Total, because Colgate is the only FDA-approved toothpaste that can reverse and prevent gingivitis, which is an early form of gum disease. And as involved as I am in the diabetes community, and I'm a medical doctor, I didn't even know that people with diabetes had a 2 times more likely risk of developing gum disease myself. So I think it's an important message to get out there, especially when, you know, such an easy thing like choosing Colgate Total, you know, can help treat that. So to me, it's an important message to get out there because, you know, diabetes can cause some very serious things. It's important just to do everything that we can to keep ourselves as healthy as possible.
Mm-hmm. And so does it cause extra plaque on the teeth, or does it cause more calcification to the plaque?
Well, you know, it's really not known exactly why you develop more gum disease. My theory personally is that if your blood sugars are kind of out of control, it can make it harder for you to fight infection. Also, diabetes tends to be a disease of small blood vessels, so it might be, you know, decreased blood flow to the gums that also can lead to more infection. So I think it's probably related to blood flow as well as ability to fight infection.
Mm-hmm. And what does that Total Guard do for you?
Oh, why? You know, it is the only toothpaste that has the FDA approval, so it actually can reverse and also just prevent gingivitis even if you don't have it yet. So it kind of treats the earlier form of gum disease, preventing it from progressing to a more serious form.
Oh, good. Yeah. So when you competed and won the amazing race, what got you interested in even going into a competition like that?
You know, I was in my final year of training. I was in my fellowship in pain management at the Mayo Clinic, and I was watching the show, and I was just thinking about all the challenges, you know, the time zone changes, the geography, the fact that you can only carry a backpack with you. And I just thought, wow, if someone with diabetes did this, it would really show that there are no limitations to what you can do, because I feel like it's almost every single limitation balled up into one adventure. And so from there, I actually decided to apply, you know, and I actually got on the show, obviously, with my good friend who's also an anesthesiologist. So to me, I really wanted to use it as a platform to show that, you know, activity, travel, time zone changes, stress, you know, varied eating, all those variables could be managed. And that was actually my goal. I did not go into the show wanting to win. I went into the show wanting to complete it and show that someone with diabetes could do this. Then on the very last leg of the race, when it was down to 3 teams, it hit me that, oh my gosh, we might actually win this thing, you know. Then, of course, I was super focused on that. But my main goal going into it was just to do it.
Mm-hmm. And what message do you have for youth that have juvenile diabetes?
You know, my number one thing is keep doing what you love. Just because you have diabetes, that doesn't mean you have to give up doing things like sports or travel or other hobbies. It doesn't mean you need to change your friendships. So I think keep doing what you love is you know, my main message. But I think also ask for help. You know, I mean, sometimes parents can be great help sources of help, and sometimes parents, you know, especially with teenagers, it may not be, you know, maybe they need to connect more with their nurse educator or their endocrinologist, or find a great online community, you know, whether it's the JDRF or Beyond Type 1 or Diabetes Sisters. There's so many resources now, but I think connecting with other people that know what you're going through, so you can try to be as healthy as possible, you know, be engaged without being overwhelmed. But, you know, number one is I don't want anybody with diabetes, you know, whether they're, you know, really young or not as young anymore, that they, I just really want them to keep doing what they love, because it is, it's a hard disease. It's an endless disease. There are no days off. There are no vacations. There's no cure. So I think we need to have those things that fill our gas tank. You know, we need to have those things that make us laugh, that make us happy, so that we don't get burned out from dealing with diabetes on a day-to-day basis.
Mm-hmm. So the people in your life should really be on your team and know about and share your concerns with diabetes.
Absolutely. And I feel really, you know, like it's a really difficult position for a lot of loved ones, because you don't want to be the diabetes police, but you also want to be supportive and, you know, just a source of positive, you know, interaction. You don't want to be a bad influence, but you don't want to be too much. So there definitely is a delicate balance there that I'm sure is different for every single person. But I think as long as, you know, loved ones can express that they want to be supportive, they want to be educated, they want to be part of it, I think that that's really, really helpful for someone who is dealing with diabetes.
Mm-hmm. And how young were you when you found out you had diabetes?
I was 12 years old when I was diagnosed with diabetes.
And was it genetic? Did your parents have it as well, or?
You know, nobody in my family had it, although my older brother was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes a few years ago. So, you know, I think we do have some sort of genetic predisposition, but I was the first one, so I'm the trailblazer in my family.
You're a wonderful trailblazer. That's great. So how do you eat? Do you have to pack food on you all the time? Or what? How do you make sure that the food is working as medicine as well?
Well, you know, for me, it's different. When I was pregnant, which I have a one-year-old and a two-year-old, so this was decent for me, it was a whole other level. So, and in that phase of life, I did pack my food. You know, weighed everything so I could try to get the carbohydrate count as specific as possible, or as accurate as possible. But now that I'm not pregnant, I'm kind of more back to my daily routine. I do carbohydrate counting. So it's not necessarily what I eat exactly. It's more about having an idea of what the quantity is so I can give enough insulin to cover it. So I eat out. I eat at restaurants. But I think, you know, at this point in my life, I'm pretty good at knowing how many carbohydrates are in a certain meal. And if it's something that I'm not as familiar with, what I'll do is I'll just give my estimate and I'll test my blood sugar again, you know, 30 minutes or an hour later. And I can always add extra insulin if I didn't give enough originally.
Fascinating. And you're always watching your insulin?
Always.
Always.
Always. It's like, you know, the first thing I look at in the morning, it's the last thing I look at when I go to bed. I look at it all day long.
Do you worry about it in the night, or can you just rest and have a good sleep?
Oh my gosh, sleep is like the thing I miss most right now. No, I think, you know, some nights I get to sleep through the night, but there's always something, you know, my pump battery is low, or it's alarming because there's an air bubble and I have to change out the infusion set, or my blood sugar is low, or my blood sugar is high, or, you know, so I think diabetes, you know, wakes me up an average of 2 times a night. You know, sometimes it's longer, sometimes it's a little bit less, but it certainly, you know, can make getting a good night's sleep fairly difficult.
Okay, we've been talking to Dr. Natalie, and we are going to be right back after a quick break.